Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast. Our mantra is that organisations need to be where their customers are, cutting across internal silos and taking a more holistic view, delivering a consistent service across all channels, offline, online, social and mobile. For over a decade, we've helped some of the world's biggest brands engage with their target customers on a deeply emotional level with industry-leading conferences and online digital media. To find out more, visit engagecustomer.com.
In this episode, we sit down with Lindsay Mitchell, Global Director of Customer Engagement and Care for Philips. Lindsay develops, implements, and manages best-in-class customer journey processes through identifying and executing strategies to improve the quality of online customer communications and retention. Lindsay is passionate about real-time customer feedback, builds and executes VOC programs that focus on actively listening and prioritizing actions that will deliver on customers' unmet needs. She leads a talented, digitally focused team for Philips Healthcare that test, design and explore programs that enrich and influence customer relationships. We speak to Lindsay about what it's like to work at Philips and more about recent projects and future plans.
Lindsay, how are you doing today?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. And you've been, I think you've been at Philips for a while.
Yeah, I've been, since I was a baby, I think. So, I joined straight from university, actually, and thought, oh, I'll get some experience at a big blue chip company. And 25 years later, I'm still here.
Well, obviously, it was successful. So tell us a bit more about that, because it sounds like you've had a chance to really see an organization like that. I mean, they were obviously pretty big, I think, when you joined, but obviously they've grown even more. So what have you been doing there?
Yeah, well, I think what's really interesting is that, you know, we're a company that's all about innovation. I mean, we really stand for healthcare technology now. And I think a lot of people will still think of Philips as making TVs and, stereos and things like that. But we've really divested a lot of our businesses. But my career actually started in Philips Lighting, which is how the company started about 130 years ago. And I've worked across all of the different business units. So it's given me, I mean, there's just been amazing opportunities there as a big corporate that I've sought out. And I think what's been fantastic is I've worked across operations, sales, marketing. So I've got a really good wide lens on all different kind of business verticals. And most of my career has actually been in marketing. But the last sort of 5 to 7 years is when I went from marketing more into customer care, customer support. And the reason I made that switch is that I kind of recognize as a marketeer, we talk a lot about consumer and customer insights, but we're not close to the customer. But the people that are managing the contact centres and managing the contact channels and the social media have those insights every day. And that's one of the reasons I made the jump, because I thought, actually, I want to get closer to that consumer. Mm.
And I think with many people that have had not necessarily a long career, but, a longest career, being in these different roles really gives you the insight so that when you arrive at a customer an interaction, customer engagement role, whatever you want to call it, you're really well prepared for it. Yeah. And what's your experience in dealing with contact centers? You've obviously had some, and how does that look now in terms of what you're doing?
Yeah, well, my first experience with contact centers was when I worked in the personal health business. So that's our consumer division of Philips, the sort of toothbrushes, hair dryers, beauty products, male shavers. Huge consumer base where you're really talking about, one-to-one interactions, hopefully once every 5 years, if mainly if a product goes wrong. And the main reason people do reach out to Philips when I was in that consumer world was if they had a broken product or they had a question or they wanted a spare part. So I managed the UK contact centre operation for the UK for about 3 years and experienced lots of different things, not only in just the standard processes, the standard way of working, but it was actually outside the UK, our contact centre. But I made sure I went there quarterly because for me, it was really important to understand the frustrations of the agents. What were their pain points? Did they have access to the right information to be able to help our consumers? And also, really do side by side, listen to those calls, really understand why customers are calling and how we help them in the most efficient way. And I think just through that, because I was there for a little while, you know, we have the standard contact channels like email and phone, because in your previous presenter talked about it as well, people still want that human touch. Yeah. You know, people want efficiency, but they also want to speak to someone if they can't get what they want.
Yeah.
So lots of
And it sounds like you were pretty much ahead of the curve in that respect, going, you know, really taking time to find out, you know, talk to the contact center people. And this is, again, it seems so obvious, but, you know, many organizations don't do it. And did that result in some new initiatives? Because you obviously would have seen, oh, you know, I think these guys can do this or something like that. How did that play out?
Yeah, absolutely. So our sonic toothbrushes, so, you know, electric toothbrushes to many, you know, we had a few issues with those, not in terms of a quality problem, but, you know, if somebody had a toothbrush that was making a strange vibrating noise, you know, and they phone up, and over the phone, it might be quite difficult to find the serial number or to try and describe what was an issue for the agent. So actually we did a really good pilot where we tested, you know, once the person called, we asked if we could have access to their video camera. And then we did sort of video chat so that the consumer could actually show and visually what was wrong with the product. And if somebody was struggling to find that serial number, for example, you'd have the agent saying, OK, just turn it right, turn it left, turn it upside down. And actually, the first time right and the case closing was just so much quicker. Because, you know, it wasn't this ping pong or it wasn't an extended call just trying to, you know, root through the problem. So that was a really exciting pilot to do.
And if you think about the online customer base at Philips, obviously, as things have moved on, more and more people are ordering and responding online. But what current business challenges that you have there? Perhaps you've sort of explained one of them, but where the contact center can really help out.
Yeah, well, actually, I moved from sort of consumers to customers. So I'm now in our healthcare B2B business. And it is, you know, Philips is quite a giant. So sometimes when you're trying to change things, it's about like moving an oil tanker. And, you know, what we're in the healthcare business, you know, it's much more traditional business. It's set up with, you know, major hospitals who have an account manager buying big medical equipment. But we have some smaller medical consumables that we want to sell direct and we want to sell online. But these customers that are buying those products have been used to that kind of one-to-one interaction with a salesperson or account manager. And what we're trying to do is set up a self-serve e-commerce environment for them. And where the contact center's been able to help and play a role is, you know, not replacing that as a contact center, but how do we make that buying process much more efficient for us as a company, but also for the customer? And the idea, of course, is that you build an online platform, an e-commerce store that's so efficient and easy to use that, of course, you don't need to pick up a phone or you don't need to email someone. But there'll always be that case. So the challenge I'm facing at the moment is that once you open up customer support for e-commerce, you're actually really looking, you're expanding the funnel, because you could have a question of somebody who needs, you know, how do I register? It could be a commercial question. It could be, I can't find a product, or it could be, fine, where's my order? Whereas in the past, if you've had an account manager and the contact center's just been providing post-purchase support, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of, you know, segment that customer care. So yeah, it's just, you know, on a big company like Philips, the challenge is how do you look at that end-to-end process and how do you connect all of the different things internally to provide the best support for the customer?
So as you mentioned, you're now looking at B2B, but do you see differences in how B2B and B2C customers can utilize contact centers?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, obviously the volume that we're looking at for B2B is still quite small compared to the consumer operation that we handle. So it's also looking for efficiencies within the business. So what I've done is I'm utilising the experience of our contact centre. So those agents that are serving our consumers, we're actually going for a blended agent approach, and they're also servicing our customers. Oh. So it requires a slightly different profile. You know, you have to then have, you know, but they've got the product knowledge. They've got the product knowledge. They've got the agent knowledge. They know how to resolve queries. They know how to use the systems and tools. But it's also about, you know, that consumer interaction is almost like one-to-one start finish. I've got a problem with a product. I'm going to resolve it by, hopefully I'll never speak to you again because you'll never have a problem with Philips. customer if it's an ongoing relationship. So we're trying to use those agents then to sort of nurture and replace that role of an account manager. So it's, you know, it's looking at that agent profile in a slightly different way, leveraging and utilising their experience, but just making sure the customer also gets the best experience.
And I'm guessing that, that the other benefit of that is that you've got confident people. And that's one of the big things for me is confidence in your own knowledge, confidence in the fact that you'll be able to find the appropriate product knowledge online in a knowledge base wherever it happens to be. And that comes through loud and clear to customers, doesn't it? When you're able to show them, yes, I understand your issue, even if they've had, you know, B2B experience and talking to a B2C customer, it just really makes a big difference when they have that kind of background and that knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. And these customers are quite sensitive, right? Because they have had this strong relationship with a human, for example, like an account manager, where, you know, somebody maybe is driven in a car once a month to see these customers, to take an order, to have a chat, you know, what can I help you with? Have you got the right trade marketing material? And now we're asking these customers to self-serve and buy direct. And, you know, some of them jump to it, they love the idea, others are struggling with that change. So it's also a change management exercise, and we have to be sensitive to that. So there also has to be a bit of hand holding, because it's a new process, it's asking customers to do business with us in a different way. So I think we believe in the end we can provide a better customer experience, but there's a bit of a transition and a journey to get there.
Sure. Now, you mentioned obviously some of the more traditional channels, but what about things like chat and WhatsApp? Are you using that, having success with that?
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting question, actually. So in the consumer world, okay, so chat and WhatsApp are channels that have been around for a long time, and you see them on all different websites, you know, but customers are also consumers, right? So they also use these channels in their everyday life. But the interesting thing is you have people within the business where we have great success with WhatsApp and chat. So people say, well, in the consumer domains, it works, Lindsay, let's launch it for our customers. So let's put chat on the website for customers. Now, of course, all of these things cost money, and you know, you have to look at your IT architecture and your structure and your systems and tools and resourcing. But actually, you know, there was enough people saying, and we had enough rationale to say, yeah, okay, our B2B customers probably want to have lots more efficient. So we've done some test and learn pilots across Western Europe and in North America. Interesting results, though. We launched a WhatsApp pilot for our consumer retailers across Europe. Nobody used WhatsApp. We did lots of signposting. We did lots of newsletters saying it was available. Very, very little uptake. So we've actually just paused it. We're now doing a trial with chat, and we'll compare. We'll do a bit of an A-B in terms of what was most adopted. But, you know, I think you have to try these things. But I think it's all about customer insights. And, you know, really, we didn't have customers saying, I want to contact Philips via WhatsApp and chat. We had a momentum in the business to say, let's do for our customers what we do for our consumers. And some of those times, those assumptions are wrong.
And I think it's a theme that we heard earlier in the day about the fact that, yes, all of the channels are there. The technology exists, and notwithstanding your point about cost, we could certainly implement them, but is it necessary? Will that market segment respond positively, or are we just going to put it out there and as you've described? And of course, you do exactly what you should do, which is to test and learn. And perhaps there are some may come out of this, there may be some very specific situations that you might find. Actually, WhatsApp really works well, you know, perhaps with a pharmacist, you know, a single pharmacist ordering your product, you know, who knows? It's just that kind of stuff. And it kind of brings me to the next question, you know, sort of looking at what further changes you're thinking about, because obviously this is a very fluid marketplace. And you know, what do you see CX looking like in the future for Philips?
Yeah, so I think it's about being seamless. So what I do know, and everyone at Philips knows it's a challenge, is there's far too many digital and contact touch points. Right, so too many phone numbers, too many email addresses, too many ways of contacting Philips. So especially in the online world, you know, someone could come by the e-store, someone could come by .com, and find a phone number. So what we're focusing on at the moment is just having a much more seamless process. So how do we just simplify the way of contacting Philips. We also, you know, part of my role is also to run the voice of customer programs for Philips, the NPS programs. We constantly look at our insights there, try and close the loop on that. And there's a lot around complaints around customer support and the ease of getting in contact with someone at Philips. So, you know, that's where our focus is, just to look at sort of much more simplified points of triage. Because we're a big business and there's lots of routes to go. So, of course, it isn't easy to do so. But that's where we focus our energy at the moment.
Yeah, and I think you're right to do that, because I think, again, people are overwhelmed sometimes. And by this, I mean customers are overwhelmed. Well, you know, what should I try? You know, should I phone them? Should I do this? And you want, and again, with certain customer segments, you know from experience. And even if you say, well, we need to change for the future, they won't adapt or adopt it as quickly as you might like. And again, you spend some time and effort and it doesn't really pay off. So I think, you know, what you're doing, testing and learning with certain these areas are well worthwhile. You mentioned voice of the customer. Do you combine voice of the customer and voice of the employee data to sort of see if there's some commonality there?
Oh, that's really interesting. No, actually, we don't. But what I do is I also very passionate about employee engagement. So actually, within my function, I do lead a squad which looks constantly at employee engagement. But that's more around, you know, we have employee engagement surveys every quarter. And then we probably look at the results, look at the verbatim feedback and kind of do these deep dives, these employee dialogues. So, you know, create a safe environment to try and get more and more insights and then make an action plan or pick a couple of things that we feel will trend in the right direction. But what we do is we approach employee feedback in the same way as we do customer feedback. So for me, it's not about the measurement. It's about surveying to act, not surveying to measure. So for me, it doesn't matter about the score. It matters why the score and what people are saying is driving the score. So it's about those detractor comments and trying to find the trend lines and say, actually, what are the big buckets we can make a difference with? And getting the right people involved. So, and giving people a voice in a safe environment.
Yeah, it's very true. Expression I use is don't ask if you can't act.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think it's really up to, as you say, it you will find, I think, and the reason I asked the question in the first place is organizations have found as they begin to combine that, yes, you do it in different ways, you may ask some different questions, but some of the outcomes in terms of, oh, actually, employees have been telling us this as well. A customer said, you know, whatever it happens to be, and you go, well, yeah, now you've got validation from both sides, and it really does make a difference. So I think in terms of where you're going in the future, as you said, Philips is a very... A big tanker to turn around. But in terms of sort of looking at the, I guess, the product mix that you've got now, and specifically, and as you mentioned, in the medical area, where do you see the focus in the future? You still make some of the other electrical devices that you're known for, but where do you see the big focus going forward?
So I think it's, you know, just having a bit more of a single customer view. So I think it's, you know, we've got a lot of data in Philips, but it's dotted everywhere. So it's about bringing it together. It's about having this 360 view. It's about having the different touch points. We have lots of different surveys on customer insights for customers, for example. We have online surveys, we have relationship surveys. You know, it's about bringing it all together and connecting the dots for me. There's too much going on and we need to bring it together.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the good thing and what you've shared with us very candidly and articulately is that you recognize, you know, the issues you've got. And not that they're bad, but just that, you know, I guess the way I put it, you know where the bodies are buried and you probably have a detailed map. So you're able to sort of work your way through that. So thank you so much. You've shared some really great stuff. It's been really interesting hearing more about what Philips does. And I guess for many other people, they're going to learn a lot about Philips as well. So thank you so much for that today.
Thank you.